My name is Sunny Miller. I'm the director at Trap Rock Peace Center in Deerfield, Massachusetts, and we're delighted to have on the phone with us Joseph Mangano of the Radiation and Public Health Project. Thank you for joining us today, Joseph. I understand you have your degree and a master's degree in public health and also an MBA from Fordham University in New York, your public health degree from the University of North Carolina, and that you began as a research assistant with the Radiation and Public Health Project in 1989 and are now the national coordinator. Could you tell us a bit about your focus of research right now? What are you working on?
Sure, Sunny. We are the only research group in the United States that I know of that is dedicated to studying the harmful effects of radiation exposure from nuclear reactors. So our focus is kind of two basic areas. First of all, we have done a number of studies about what are cancer rates near nuclear plants. For example, we did an article about childhood cancer rates near nuclear plants in the eastern United States and found they were very high. We also did another study on what happens when you close nuclear reactors, and we found that in the first 2 years after closing, the infant death rate and the childhood cancer rate drops way down.
What are those numbers for the reduction in the infant mortality rates?
Yes. Typically, what we did was looked at the 2 years before closing and the 2 years after closing in the area, downwind areas within 40 miles of eight different closed nuclear plants around the country. And typically in a two-year period in America, the infant death rate will go down about 6% or so. We found that near these eight plants, the rate went down 17%, okay? That's almost triple. And we're not talking about three or four additional deaths that were prevented. We're talking about hundreds.
Oh, that's really great news. You know, I don't often hope to find much good news when I interview someone about radiation health effects, so thank you for sharing that. We're promoting the idea of parents sending in baby teeth now for analysis of strontium-90 levels, and I understand that just one tooth, whether from a child who loses it tomorrow or one that a parent has saved, would be adequate for your study.
Yes. Well, that's the other type of study I was mentioning to you, and that is no one has ever done a study looking at radiation in the body of people who live near nuclear reactors in the United States. We have started one that we call the Tooth Fairy Project, and what the project is our asking people to donate a baby tooth that has been lost by a child. The child sends it in to us, and I'll give you how information later on how you can send it. And we send it to a laboratory, which takes the tooth and measures the level of a chemical called strontium-90 in the tooth. Strontium-90 is a chemical that we don't find in nature. It only comes from two sources. One, when an atomic bomb explodes, and number two, when a nuclear reactor operates and produces electrical energy. It's very much like calcium. When you drink it in milk or breathe it in air or drink it in water, it goes right to the stomach, right to the bloodstream, and very quickly attaches to the bone and the teeth like calcium does. Unfortunately, whereas calcium promotes health, strontium-90 harms health. It kills cells and it damages cells. It is radioactive and it is cancer-causing. And again, we are doing this tooth study to measure how much is accumulating in the body of children near nuclear reactors.
We're really glad for this opportunity to have a real analysis of our contamination levels downwind of the oldest reactor in New England at Vernon, Vermont. Boston is only about 80 miles from this reactor. The Quabbin water supply is only about 25 to 30 miles from New England's oldest reactor. And, you know, I think that many of us have been living downwind for quite some time and will be quite interested. How many teeth do you need for a really good analysis?
To do a good analysis near a reactor like Vermont Yankee, we probably need about 100 teeth. This would give us an idea of, number one, are the strontium levels higher for people closest to the reactor? Number two, it would give us an idea, are rates going up or going down? And by the way, so far we've done 4,400 teeth near 7 reactors in the country, and we found just what I said. One, the counties closest to the reactor are highest in strontium, and number two, in the 1990s, the average strontium level has gone up about 50%, which is a great concern as our reactors get older. But however, so we're looking for 100. That's kind of a magic number. But even we find that even after just a couple of dozen teeth, if we're getting a pattern, that pattern usually remains the same up to 100 teeth. We're just looking to make it as significant as possible.
Now, our nearby reactor is over 30 years old. Are you finding a difference in the strontium-90 levels near old reactors as compared to newer reactors?
That's a very good question. We have not found that yet. For example, of the 7 areas that I've mentioned, the highest levels of strontium-90 come from southeast Pennsylvania near the Limerick reactor, plant. Limerick has 2 reactors at its plant, and they are relatively new. You know, Vermont Yankee is about 33 years old. Limerick's reactors are 15 and 20 years old, yet the levels are highest. Now, whether it's due to Limerick or whether it's due to other reactors or other sources, we don't know for sure, but there is not a correlation that the older it is, mm-hmm. the more strontium. I think it's more a matter of how much radiation is being emitted.
Uh-huh. And perhaps the having 2 reactors, doubles the opportunity for emissions.
Having a close-by reactor, like, for example, Vermont Yankee has Vermont Row, which is closed, but for years operated just maybe 15 miles away.
Yes. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how the public can better understand your work. Are there any publications that you could speak with us about?
Certainly. What I'll do is what you hear a lot these days, and I will send you to our website. It's very easy to remember. It's www.radiation.org.
Thank you.
We just updated it a few months ago. And if you go onto the reading room section, you will find a list of all the articles that we have published and some reports as well. And there are, and for a number of them, there are either summaries or the full article that you can just take a look into. And you can also find out more about our 2 study. That is probably the best way to get a basic understanding of what our work is all about.
I understand that your group of medical researchers have published 21 peer-reviewed articles in scientific journals.
That's right. Let me make it clear, Sonny, we are not an advocacy group that goes out and lobbies politicians and for policy change. We are composed of scientists and health professionals, and our work is simply to do research on the harmful effects of radiation and to publish it so that others will use it to make a safer nuclear policy. And yes, we have gone out and had 21 articles published, which is not very easy to do. It goes through a very long and extended peer review process where an expert reviewer or reviewers that we don't know will review our articles and say, yes, it's worth publishing, no, it isn't worth publishing. We've had 21 of those, and we're quite proud. 4 of them are on the tooth study, by the way. So that has been published, and a lot of people are beginning to take notice.
Well, thank you for working so hard on the publications. Thanks to Sally Shaw of Gill, Massachusetts, I've read the Z Magazine article, which is quite easy to understand. I would recommend it even for junior high and high school students who are interested. Is there a favorite book that you would recommend?
Yes. One of the 5 books that I made, we've also published 5 books since 1994. One of them is a publication called The Enemy Within. The lead author is J. M. Gould, who is the founder of our organization and sits on our board. It is published by a company called 4 Walls, 8 Windows in New York. And I know it's available on a number of sites. Certainly, if you go onto Amazon.com, you can find the book, and it is available. It's a paperback, and it's relatively inexpensive.
And our local bookstores would be glad to order that for people, too, I'm sure. So let's thank you for all these wonderful access points, radiation.org, several publications, scientific articles. I understand The Lancet and other journals have carried your articles.
Yes.
Let's talk a bit about the health effects that are caused by strontium-90. I believe that lymphoma might be one of the problems. What are the childhood cancer rates showing?
Oh, again, let's do a very quick chemistry lesson and go back to what strontium-90 does. Strontium-90 is like calcium, and it, again, attaches to the bone and to the teeth. Now, strontium-90 emits a beta particle, which can penetrate a certain distance, which means that strontium-90 not only affects the bone, but penetrates into the bone marrow in the center of the bone. This is a crucial part of the body because this is where the white blood cells are formed. And the white blood cells are the immune army, Sonny. The white blood cells determine how strong an immune response one has against not only cancer, but to asthma and to common colds and so on. It is the immune army. So we believe that strontium-90 is not just a risk factor for bone cancer or for leukemia, let's say the blood cancer, but to all cancers and all immune diseases as well. You know, again, strontium-90 is one of over 100 chemicals that are only produced in atomic bombs and nuclear reactors. But out of those 100, from way back, strontium-90 has been one that's been of great interest. Let's get away from chemistry. Let's do a quick history lesson. In the 1950s and early 1960s, the United States and the Soviet Union tested hundreds of atomic bombs above the ground. We tested ours in Nevada. The Soviets tested theirs in Siberia. And a lot of fallout got into the air and then later was rained out into the back to Earth and got into the food chain, you know, the water and the milk and so on. And people were concerned about fallout, but in particular they were concerned about strontium-90. In the early 60s, protesters, especially mothers with carrying baby carriages, would carry signs saying, "Get the strontium-90 out of my child's milk." Okay, even back then, strontium-90 was seen as not just another of the 100-plus chemicals, but an especially potent and especially toxic one. And that's why we study it, because, yes, each of these chemicals are harmful. Uranium and iodine and cesium and so on, but something about the strontium is an especially potent one. And it's especially potent to kids. That's the other point I wanted to make. All humans aren't created equal. The same dose of radiation to an adult is much worse when the same dose of radiation gets into the body of a young infant or a fetus. They're very small, Sonny, and they're growing very fast. Their cells are dividing very rapidly. If you harm a cell in a fetus and make it defective, it's going to quickly reproduce into other defective cells, and the body may not be able to repair it.
Mm.
But that's another reason we study strontium-90 in baby teeth, in the children. They are the most vulnerable in our society.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that if parents who have or neighbors know children with cancer, that you're particularly interested in studying those baby teeth.
Yes. We have collected 4,400 baby teeth, mostly near 7 U.S. nuclear plants. I told you what our results were. They're highest near plants, and their levels are rising. We would like to do every single nuclear plant in this country. That's not going to be possible, unfortunately. It's quite costly to do it. So what we're doing now is shifting our focus to collecting teeth from children with cancer. And we are now comparing average strontium-90 levels in kids with cancer versus healthy kids. Are they higher in kids with cancer? What is it about kids with cancer that's different than healthy kids? So far, we've collected 162 teeth. We need more. We want to collect a couple of hundred more. But so far, the early results show that the kids with cancer have a higher average level of of strontium 90 in their teeth.
Well, I hope that many of our listeners will spread that news. It's a very important work you're doing, and I understand that you are the only group doing this work currently.
The only group in the United States, no question about it. It's unfortunate. We believe this should be something done by public health departments, county and state health departments, and even groups like the National Cancer Institute. Unfortunately, they do not. Their policy is that, well, if a reactor emits below a certain level of emissions every year, it is permissible and therefore safe. We think that's a little presumptive.
Mm-hmm. So our
maybe they are safe, but we need to find it. It's like saying if you smoke less than 4 cigarettes a year, you won't be harmed. Well, maybe that's true, but you have to do the studies to find it. So we think this should eventually be done by public health departments.
And our congressional representatives, our mayors, our county elected officials, our select board, or perhaps even our pediatricians and dentists could be helpful in asking for public funding for such studies. I wonder, is the particular method of analysis of the strontium 90 levels complicated and only done at a few labs, or could it be done across the country at universities?
Well, it's done, it has to be done in a specialized laboratory, what we call a radiochemistry laboratory. But yes, it can be done by a number of universities. We've actually been working with one lab, but we've discussed our work with several others who do the same thing. Yes, it is certainly possible.
Are you talking about a handful or a dozen or more than 30 labs in the U.S.?
Oh, yes, several. Put it this way, we have a particular machine. It's a top-of-the-line machine in radiochemistry that does this, that analyzes the teeth. In the United States alone, I think there are 100 of these machines. I'm sorry, 15 of these machines and 100 worldwide or something.
Mm-hmm.
Just this machine. There are many other machines. So the answer is dozens.
Okay, great.
Not just one person that can do this.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Joseph, and I just wonder if there's any final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with.
First of all, you're very welcome. And second of all, if you want to donate a tooth, we are very appreciative if you did. And the way to do that is two ways. First, you could call an 800 number and ask for a special mailing envelope. The number is 1-800-582-3716. The second way is to go to our website, www.radiation.org, and you can just print out a page that looks like our envelope with the information that we want. Put the page in an envelope, put the tooth in an envelope, and send it to us, and we will process the tooth, and we will present results of what we find in the Vermont Yankee area as soon as we can.
Well, I know that many of our listeners and our neighbors here are passing out those forms. We passed out many at the Martin Luther King celebrations in January, and the Worldwide Peace Vigils, we'll be sharing those forms. I hope our dentists and librarians and school nurses will help to pass them on, and I'm sure that you're going to get enough teeth very soon. We've been speaking with Joseph Mangano, National Coordinator for the Radiation and Public Health Project, undertaking the Tooth Fairy Project. Thank you so much, and what a wonderful opportunity we have to learn more at your website, radiation.org.
Thank you, Sonny.